Das Thakur ki jai. Prem Shri Kahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyam Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrindaki jai. Gaur Premananda. Glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve. Gauravani Pachani Nivasesis Nirvani Paskachau Desatarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamma Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rukam Sagarjatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sapadutam Padichana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So it's October 23rd, 2011, Kadasi and Kartik in San Diego. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 26, the Ila Gita. We're reading text 9, but text 8 is on the board, which we did yesterday. So Mahathathrabhu said we'll chant text 8 together, and we'll just read through the translation to text 8 and then text 9.
So,
Krishna
chanting
8
and then reading 9, is that?
Yeah, that's what Mahathathrabhu said to do, since you did 8 yesterday.
Yeah, I guess so.
So that's no harm, right?
No,
Naham Veda Benirmukta.
Naham Veda Benirmukta.
Surya Vabhu Dito Muya.
Surya Vabhu Dito Muya.
Mushito Varshapukanam.
Mushito Varshapukanam.
Batahani Gatanyuta.
Batahani Gatanyuta.
Please chant.
Naham Veda Benirmukta.
Okay, I'm just going to forward for the next one. That lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising or setting of the sun. Alas, for so many years I passed my days in vain. Text 9. Ahome atma sammoho yenatma yoshitam krita krida mrigas chakra varati naradeva shikamani. Aho.
Alas,
may,
my,
atma, of myself,
sammoha,
total bewilderment, yena,
by which,
atma,
my body,
yoshitam,
of women,
krittaha,
became,
krida mirgaha,
a toy animal,
chakravarti,
mighty emperor,
Naradeva,
of kings,
Shikamanihi,
the crown jewel.
So this is the part of the Bhagavatam where Apurva comes to his senses. Right? Earlier in the Bhagavatam, the story kind of ended on a bad note, where Apurva was really attracted to Urvasi, and so much so that she had this deal with him. And she said, I'll stay with you as long as I never see you naked except when we're having sex, and if you take care of my lambs, right?
Yeah.
Those are the two deals. So he's... Oh, and also she would only eat food cooked in ghee.
In ghee.
Those were her conditions. Those were her prenuptial agreements with Pururva. And one day the Gandharvas, who missed Urvasi and the heavenly planets, they stole the lambs. And he was sleeping naked, and he got up in the middle of the night naked, and he started following after these lambs, and she saw him naked, and she said, okay, deal's off, bye. And he was so smitten that he was performing yajnas instead of to please Vishnu. He was performing yajnas to please her and follow her. And he ended up on her planet. So here he is on her planet, and he's
Actually, please, I read through it because I gave class to
Okay, so, yeah.
He was... I mean, there are two sections to it. First, he was trying to get her, and then he was trying to get her by pleasing Vishnu.
Okay, so he finally wanted to get her by pleasing Vishnu.
And Vishnu actually, I mean, it says Hari, that Hari led him ascend to the heavenly planets.
Okay, so he was enough of a devotee that he knew, if I want Urvasi, I've got to please Vishnu.
Yeah.
Does anyone know where Urvasi came from?
Indra.
Yeah.
She came from Lord Vishnu's thigh.
Yeah, she came from Lord Vishnu's thigh. She manifested from his body when Indra was trying to allure Narayana Rishi. He manifested with some beautiful heavenly girls, and Lord Narayan showed that he could manifest the most beautiful. So Urvasi was the most beautiful woman. She was taken then by Indra back to Indraloka. So we can't even imagine. I mean, we can't even imagine if we think of some beautiful person on this planet and multiply by about 100,000, 200,000 times, you might get something of Urvasi. Not only her beauty, but her qualities. So anyway, Puruva went there, and then he finally came to his senses here in these verses. Okay, so translation and purport. Alas, although I am supposed to be a mighty emperor, the crown jewel of all kings on this earth, just see how my bewilderment has rendered me a toy animal in the hands of women. Purport. Since the king's body had become fully engaged in satisfying the superficial desires of women, his body was now like a toy animal in their hands. Aho me atma samoho yen atma yoshitam kritaha kridam rigas chakravarti naradeva shikamanihi. Kridam rigas. Krida is play. Rigas is an animal, sometimes a deer, but some sort of an animal, a play animal. Although chakravarti naradeva shikamanihi. Naradeva. Nada means humans, deva means god. I was a god among the humans. Such an exalted person, but I became like a toy animal. So this is, of course, the fate of all materialistic people. This verse reminds me very much, actually, of something that Lord Jesus said. He says, those who seek to find their lives will lose it, but those who lose their lives for my sake will find it. So when one seeks to become a master, one becomes a servant. One tries to become the master of the universe, one becomes like a slave. One becomes like a toy animal. One loses all of one's freedom in the name of finding it. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. I am the master. I am important. I am the big king of all of the ways of becoming a master. Of course, maybe nowadays it's not quite like that. But of all the ways of becoming a master, the chief is to become a king. I mean, what does a king have? A king is the epitome of Rajagun. A king has power. Go do this, and it happens. Right? Lots of wealth at their disposal, build this, so many homes, so many people serving them. Yes, whatever you want, yes, whatever you want, yes, whatever you want. Wonderful food, opulent clothing. Right? At least in former times, many attractive women. Of course, nowadays the politicians try to imitate that and they just get in trouble. But that was the former standard. Right? Many, many wives, many consorts and dancing girls. Oh, you're so handsome. Like, oh, yeah. So that's the epitome of being the master, going out into battle with your sword and your arrows or your mystic weapons and finishing the enemy. And of course, although Krishna describes this as the demoniac mentality, like, this person was my enemy and I've killed them and I'll kill my other enemy, the kings were generally wedded to Dharma. They wanted to be known as righteous. The mentality of a king, I want to be a good person. I want my reputation to go on even after death. In fact, this is how Krishna bewildered the demoniac king Jarasandhar. And he said, the most important thing is reputation. What people will say about you after you die. Now, if you think about this logically, it's ridiculous. Why do we care about what people will say about us after we die? We won't even know. I mean, we've had so many lives, and so many people may even be still talking about what we did in another life. Does that have any value? I know of one child born in the movement who's now become a kirtaniya. They're flying him all over the world to lead kirtans. When he was born, when the astrologers looked at his chart, they said in his last life he was a big guru with thousands and thousands of disciples. So since he's now only about 23, we can assume that some of his disciples are still worshiping him somewhere. Right? But what meaning does that have for him? Meaningless. Right? Mr. Steve Jobs, wherever he is, he doesn't care that people are now buying his, what is the latest one? 4S or something? What does he care? How, what the sales are? People are saying, you know, Jai Steve Jobs. He's not even aware of it. But this is the mood of the king. Let people glorify me now and in the future, and not just be glorified for for glorification, but to be glorified as dharmic, to be glorified as charitable. Maharaj Shibhi, who gave part of his own body, Karna, who gave his own armor, to be glorified for being righteous. The kings had a mood of caring. They were like a super father, that they were caring for the citizens. So this is the pinnacle of power in this world. Of course, the pinnacle king is that of Indra. He's the king of kings in this world. He's the Mahakshatriya in the universe with wealth and power and adoration. So this is what we're looking for, and if we're not trying to become a big king, of course, I say in modern days, perhaps people try to become a king by being a sports star or a rock and roll star instead of being a government head, because a government head in the modern day doesn't have quite the same punch to it, right? You know, we have our balance of power, which was, we created that in the United States to try to get rid of the power of the kings in Europe. So the president, just like when our Obama was being elected, he said, if I didn't think I could make a difference, I wouldn't be running for president. And then he discovers how little difference he can make. Right? The Congress says, no, we're not going to vote this. And the judicial says, no, we don't accept the meaning of the law, and etc. And then he's got to run. As soon as he gets a little bit established in power, he's got to run around trying to get back into power again. And he certainly doesn't have a bunch of dancing girls. Right? And if he did, he'd get in a lot of trouble. So people, when they try to become powerful today, they try to become a big basketball star or a big businessman, like somebody like Gates or Jobs or some Maha singer. But what happens when you try to become a master? I mean, if we haven't done that, we've tried to become a master, at least in our own little world. Let me get my own little house or my own little room or my own little place on the shelf. Or, you know, sometimes even moving up a position in ISKCON. Let me become the TEL president, then the GBC, and then this, you know. Get my little niche where I can have some power. But what happens when we try to get power in this world? When we try to get some domain, what's our experience?
We make enemies,
definitely. And we end up having to be a servant. I mean, how do you move up the power ranks? You have to flatter people, right? To do what they want. You have to start playing a political game. You lose your freedom. If you want to have a nice, big house and a fancy car, you've got to serve somebody. Either you've got to serve your employers. You know, and if your employers say, get here at 8 in the morning and work until 6 at night, you know, you quit your job, it's a bad economy, how are you going to get another job? You've got to just do what they say. And even if you're so-called your own boss, I mean, my husband always wanted to have his own business. I wanted my own business. And then you're the servant of the customers. He was more tied down when he had his own business than when he had a job. When you have a job, you can say, sorry, I'm not coming in today. When you have your own business, you can't do that. And there's no business, and it's closed, and the customers come to an empty place. All of a sudden, instead of being your own boss, you're the servant of your customers, or you're the servant of your employer. And then you think, okay, well, I'll find a really nice member of the opposite sex. You know, the man is thinking, I'll find a woman, and she'll serve me. She'll say, my hero. And she'll cook whatever I like. She'll clean the house for me and wash my clothes. And when I come home from work, she'll say, oh, so glad to see you, and throw flower petals. And then the little children will go, Daddy, I love you, right? But what happens? He becomes a servant. He comes home from work, and the wife says, you know, you didn't fix the boiler. I told you that the boiler's broken. We don't have any hot water. You know, I've had to take a cold shower for 2 weeks, and you've been off playing golf. Or you've been off at the temple doing all that service instead of taking care of me. Right? And the children, instead of saying, I love you, Daddy, say, Daddy, I need some new tennis shoes. He broke my toy. And the woman is also thinking, I'm going to get a very obedient servant in my husband. He's going to come home and say, I love you, dear. You're everything to me. And he's going to fix my boiler when I tell him to fix my boiler. And he's going to just want to be with me all the time. So I have some devotee friends where right after they get married, she left him, she broke off the marriage. I said, why? And she said, well, he always wanted to be at the temple. He didn't want to spend any time with me. I wanted to marry a devotee, but I wanted to marry a devotee who wanted to be with me. So we're thinking, all right, this man's going to be my most obedient servant. And you're thinking, this woman's going to be my most obedient servant. These children, they're going to be my most obedient servant. But instead, we become the servant. We keep trying to be the master. I think I'm going to master my body. Haven't you wanted to master your body so it would just do exactly what you wanted to do? Maybe that works when you're 20. It doesn't keep working when you get older.
When you're 20, senses are out of control.
And then you're not the master either. But a few years ago, I was in the middle of doing a project and I tried to work really, really hard like I could when I was 25. And my body said, I'm very sorry, we don't run this program anymore. You know, we're thinking, I'm going to be the master. But we're the servant. The body says, eat. We say, yes, sir. Right? Go to sleep. Okay. Become attracted to this sense object. Okay. And we think, I'm going to get this body to do whatever I want it to do. It doesn't work. And if you want a really strong, healthy body, then you've got to serve your body. You've got to feed it the right food, and you've got to get the right kind of exercise. And we just end up being a servant. We try to be the master of our body. We try to be the master of our mind. We try to be the master of our family. We try to be the master of the society. And we're just serving these things. And we become so disappointed and we become angry at the source. Oh, it's all the fault of my husband, or it's all the fault of my wife. As these verses go on, by the way, it's very clear that Puruva is not blaming Urvasi. He's blaming, who's he blaming?
Himself.
He's not blaming Urvasi, it's not her fault. But we do that. Oh, it's my husband's fault, it's my wife's fault, it's my temple president's fault, it's the GBC's fault. It's Obama's fault. It's the demigod's fault. It's Krishna's fault. They were supposed to serve me. Ishwaraham Ambogi Siddham. I'm supposed to be the servant. I'm supposed to be the master, and instead, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. Mana Shastran Indriyani. Prakriti Stani Karshati. Instead, Karshati. I'm just struggling. And struggling, and struggling, and struggling, and I'm never the master. I just can't become a master. And if I so-called become a master, it's because I've had to serve, and my position is so tenuous. Kamala dala jala jiva natalamala. All my mastery can be finished in a moment. My fame can turn to infamy. My wealth can turn to poverty. My beautiful wife can run off with somebody else. My beautiful house can be knocked over by an earthquake. My body can be crippled in a car accident or a stroke. And then, where's my mastery? It's always an anxiety. Therefore, Krishna says, bound by a network of anxiety, of hundreds and thousands of desires. If I just get this, I'll be the master. I get this, I'll be the master. I get this, I'll be the master. I get this, I'll be the master. And you go, how can I get this? How can I keep this? How can I get this? How can I keep this? Like yoga kshema. Getting and keeping. So the devotee finds that things are just the opposite of what they seem. What's day to the materialist is night to the self-realized, and what's day to the self-realized is night to the materialist. Prabhupada says the greatest need of the soul is, first canto, what did he say? The need of the soul is?
Break out of the covered universe.
Break out of
the freedom.
The freedom. Freedom. That's what we think we're going to find by being the master, right? If I just got enough money, then I could do whatever I want. If I just had enough fame, I could do whatever I want. If I just had enough knowledge, I could do whatever I want. If I just had adoring women or adoring men, adoring children, adoring public, I could do whatever I want if I had enough fame. And we become bound tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter in the gunas, which are like ropes. How do we get this freedom? That's our basic need of the soul. By becoming a servant. It's like, huh? I become free by becoming a servant. I'm trying to get free of becoming a servant. I'm trying to get rid of this servant thing. I'm trying to be the master. No, you actually want freedom. You become a servant. But you have to know who to serve and how to serve. As an intelligent person figures out, I'm serving anyway. When I was visiting the first time I came to a temple, but when I was visiting the temple in Evanston many years ago, and I was really thinking about practicing Krishna consciousness, I bought some incense, and I didn't want to come in. It was the winter. I had big boots. I didn't want to take my boots off. And this wonderful brahmachari, Chandrasekhar Prabhu, he preached to me for 2 hours. And I said, I don't want to surrender to any authority. I said, I love Krishna consciousness, but I don't want to surrender to any authority. Those were the days of don't trust anyone over 30. Do your own thing. You know, other people called us the hippies. We called ourselves the counterculture. And he said, you've already accepted so many authorities. And I thought, oh my God, he knows my secret. How did he know? I was trying to keep that hidden. He said, why don't you accept the real authority? So the irony is that when you become the servant of Krishna, guess what? You get mastery over the mind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, by chanting Hare Krishna, you get mastery over the mind. When you become the servant of Krishna, you become free. You become free of the modes of material nature. You become free of the need to depend on any other living being. You're no longer dependent for your happiness on whether your wife greets you nicely, or whether your husband fixes the boiler, or whether the other people in the temple like you or don't like you, whether you get money or you don't get money, whether you get food or you don't get food, whether you have friends or you don't have friends, whether you have health or you don't have health. You're free. Because you know, na jayate miyate bhavakadachit nayam rupa vavitavanabhuyaha ajo nichashasvatoyam prano nahanyate hanimaneshriya. I have nothing to do with this business. I'm free. If you're up in an airplane and there's some people fighting on the ground, what does it have to do with you? Nothing. This side loses, that side wins. There's so many football games, basketball games going on in the world right now, and somebody's winning and somebody's losing, and there's wars, and what does it have to do with us? We're free. Our happiness isn't dependent on that. And one who serves Krishna also becomes free. By becoming the servant, one gains everything that one hopes to attain by trying to be the master. That's the irony. It's explained that Narada Muni, he can go wherever he wants. I can't go wherever I want. To come here, you know, I have to buy an airplane ticket, and I have to have enough money to buy the ticket, and I have to negotiate with the agent, and I have to make sure I have the proper ID, and I'm going from here to New Zealand, I have to have the proper passport, and they can stop me, and I have to have the right kind of suitcase, and it has to have the right weight in it, and the right size, and I can't bring a scissors. Right? If I say the wrong thing in line, if I make some joke about a bomb, then they won't let me in, and I'll be in jail. I mean, I'm not free. But those who surrender to Krishna, they're free. They can go wherever they want. They can do whatever they want. Kalpa Viksha Laksha Prateshu. We belong to a world where one can get whatever one wants without working. Do whatever one wants, get whatever one wants, go wherever one wants. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Loka in the Imagraha says at the top level, there's only two rules. Love and don't envy. That's all. No other rules. They don't have to say, no eating meat, fish, or egg, no intoxication, no gambling. Offer obeisances like this. Hold your beads like this. They don't have to have a GBC meeting. What new rules are we going to have? They don't have to have a government. As long as you love and don't envy, you can do whatever you want. So we're so hesitant to want to just surrender to Krishna. Mame kam sharanam rajavi. Oh, sharanam, no. I don't want to surrender. I've surrendered to a woman and I became a krita mrigas. If I surrender to Krishna, it'll be even worse. I mean, when I surrender to a woman or I surrender to a man or I surrender to my employee or my parents or my teachers or my government or whatever, I became their little dancing toy, and it was just awful. I don't. If I surrender to Krishna, God, he's so powerful. He knows everything, and he can do everything. What's he going to do with me? It's just going to be terrible. It's going to be 100,000 times worse than when I fell in love with that person. But no, it's just the opposite. Because what does Krishna value? Krishna values an exchange of freedom and love. Krishna's not like some kind of a Hitler. He's a soft boy, Navayovanam cha. He's very playful. Krishna actually enjoys playing in such a way that it seems that the devotee is his master, like we're reading this Damodar Lila. Or Radharani is his master. It also struck me about this verse, how Krishna is a plaything in the hand of Radharani. I mean, that's where this all comes from. That's where all this false imitation comes from. Krishna is falling down at the feet of Srimati Radharani, saying, please forgive me. I'll do whatever you want. He's combing her hair. And actually, he is. But that's just a free exchange of love. So we can go to that place where the reality we're looking for exists. So that's the whole science of Krishna consciousness. Flip the banyan tree upside down. Flip it back right side up. It's a little thing. Prabhupada says a very little thing, very little change. You don't have to change much of your gross activities. I mean, unless you're running a liquor store or a gambling casino. You know, we're cooking and cleaning like anybody else and doing some work during the day, whatever it may be. Whether one's going to a job or one's going on the street selling books or laying out a magazine. I mean, the external work we're doing isn't that different. But the consciousness should be different. The consciousness should be, I'm doing this because I want Krishna to be happy with me, instead of I'm doing this to become a master. Instead of I'm doing this so people will look at me and say, wow, what a smart person, or what a loyal person, or what a beautiful person, or what a wonderful person, how wonderful you are, let me serve you. We're doing this so people can say, wow, how wonderful Krishna is. And so Krishna and Prabhupada and Guru will look at us and say, yes, well done. What a good and faithful servant. Very nice. That's all, the little change. And that one little change gives us everything that we want. And it gives us everything we want so much that we no longer care about what we want. Just like these prayers. Kimanye, what is the use of any other benediction if I can see you? You get what you want so much that you don't even have any wants. Yoga kshema bahamyaham. Whatever you need, it's just automatically there. Now, if you've got some really rich person taking care of you, you don't need to think any more about what you want. They just automatically provide it. You just focus. I remember once I was doing some service in Europe, and the devotee who arranged for me to do it just provided everything. Somebody cleaned my room and did my washing and brought me prasadam and brought me all the equipment that I needed to do my service and all of the materials, everything I needed was just... And I could just focus on my... I didn't have to think about anything else. I could just focus. Like 14, I just went to the morning program and just focused on my service. Everything was automatically taken care of. I didn't have to think, I want this, I could forget about what I wanted. So when one surrenders to Krishna, everything is taken care of. You can forget about yourself. Like Prabhupada says, if you've already eaten a big meal, you forget about eating. Inconsequential. You're already full. So what we should look at is, what's my mentality? Who am I trying to please? What am I working for? What's my goal? What's my prayojana? Of course, that starts with, who am I? Who am I? I'm a soul stuck inside of a really disgusting, horrible, gross manifestation of my desire to be the master. That's who I am. And my real business is to reestablish my actual identity. And when we do this, everything we want will come in perfection. Whereas if we try to get everything we want in a materialistic way, we'll end up lamenting like Paruravat. I mean, he really had everything, this man. You know, we think some rock and roll star or somebody has everything. I mean, this man really had everything. He was actually the king of the world. And you just can't get a more beautiful and submissive wife than Urvasi. I mean, she was literally a goddess. Right, the previous purport, due to attachment to the goddess. You know, maybe New Age people going around saying all women are goddesses, but she was really a goddess. So he had great power, great wealth, a goddess wife. And all he ended up doing was lamenting. That was all. At the end, he just like, what a fool I am. You ever done that? Gotten involved in something, did something, and then go, oh, what a fool I am. So he's the example. And if we're intelligent, we'll learn from seeing the example of people like that. And from our own little experiences in this life of trying to enjoy the world and then going, oh, what a fool I was. Why did I think I could enjoy this way? And go directly. Go directly. Immediately to the real thing. To being a servant of Krishna. Becoming actually a plaything in Krishna's hands. Like Prabhupada said, you have brought me here to dance. Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance as you like a puppet in your hands. To let Krishna use us, when a materialistic person uses us, it's a horrible thing. Can you think about the last time that Krishna used you? How wonderful it was. You were doing something, you were talking to somebody or whatever, and you really felt Krishna's using me. And you were so happy. And you feel like this is who I'm meant to be. I'm exactly where I should be. So to become Krishna's plaything, and because Krishna is not exploitive, he's not selfish, he'll never leave us, he's not going to make some funny deal like this, only feed me food, cook, and ghee, or I'm out of here. And then we'll actually become happy. So this is what we should be doing every day. It's not, Krishna consciousness is not simply a set of religious rituals. It's a way of coming to our actual position. So it is precisely 8:30. I don't know if you have time for questions and comments. Yeah. I thought it was very ironic that we have a room here of mostly men, and I'm sitting here talking about not becoming a plaything in the hands of a woman. I was definitely struck with the irony of the situation. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Yes, sir.
Well, just to connect to what you just said, when I lived in L.A., I used to organize brahmachari classes 2-3 times a week, and we would bring in householders, men and women.
Oh, that's good.
To educate brahmacharis, you know, what exactly is the household ashram so they don't maintain any hallucinations and have an objective view of the thing.
Most people maintain some hallucinations about household life.
About everything, I guess.
Yes, about everything. Which is one reason that for most people the route to renunciation is to go through household life. And then you see it for yourself and you say, oh, okay. It has its pleasures, but they were kind of costly. I don't really know if I want to pay $100,000 for, you know, one piece of candy again. Rather expensive piece of candy. Yes, Ruth.
I may not have followed well everything you said. So forgive me, my question is not a good one. But in the case of a parent who's concerned about the needs of their child, there's always that angst or stress, isn't there, that one can't get away from regardless of where, if they're devoted or focused on Krishna. That's a
really nice question. And you're reminding me of the prayers of Queen Kunti. So Kunti had 3 children, and she was also raising 2 stepchildren. Her husband died when she was very young. And it was very difficult for her to raise her children because they were, her oldest son was the heir apparent to the throne. But because her husband, the emperor, had died very young, his brother had taken over the throne and was trying to put his sons, who were very evil persons, on the throne. And those persons were conspiring against her sons, constantly trying to kill them. I mean, literally. They poisoned them. They set their house on fire. They cheated them. So in one sense, she had a lot of angst for her son's well-being. At one point, her daughter-in-law was grievously insulted. But it's interesting because in that angst for her children, what she did was take shelter of Krishna. And she had a couple of very interesting prayers to Krishna. One was that she not have a material attachment for her children. And Prabhupada explains there that the relationship between two living beings should be soul to soul via the super soul. And the other is she actually said to Krishna, let me have more angst for my children and more difficulties so that I'll be more connected with you. So she didn't take these crises as a means of thinking, I'm the protector of my children, but rather as, this is an opportunity for me to take shelter of Krishna, who's the protector of my children. But of course, that's one service. Like when Uttara's child was going to be killed by Aswatthama, and she went to Krishna and she said, Krishna, Krishna, if Aswatthama kills me, that's all right, but please save my child. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a very nice song where he says that since I've become your servant, I'm maintaining your household. I'm going out and earning money to maintain your household, and I see my family members as your servants and maidservants. So something like, you know, Mahatattva Prabhu, he's sort of the temple father, and he has to take care of the residents of the temple who are somewhat like his children. I mean, it's a fact. He's got a lot of the same angst that a father has. Making sure everybody has to have, right? Everybody has to be healthy and well-fed and have a clean living facility and have enough heat in the winter, have proper clothes to wear. He's got to take care of the material facilities. And he worries about them, I'm sure. And he's got to take care of their spiritual upliftment, and he worries about that too. How can he engage them properly? So basically the same worries that a father has. But the point is, you know, how are you doing that? If one's thinking, I'm the doer, kartaham iti manyate, then one's a mudha, a fool. If one's thinking, I'm protecting my children, I'm protecting the temple residents, I'm the controller, I'm the master, then one's a fool. Because how can one do that? Your child can be killed right in front of you and you can't do anything. Or you can do everything for your child and they turn out bad. I mean, it happens. You can be the best parents in the world. So rather you're thinking, this is the living entity that Krishna's given me to take care of. Now, by the way, if one does this even in household life, then household life isn't entangling. The problem is it's hard to do this. But if one thinks, this wife, this husband, these children, this place, this has been given to me by Krishna as my service to him. And I'm not trying to please my wife so she'll smile at me. And I'm not trying to please my husband so he'll cherish me. And I'm not trying to please my children so that they'll look up to me. Or even so they'll turn out any particular way, because that's not really under my control. But I'm trying to take care of my children or my husband, my wife, my mother, my father, my home, my possessions, because they're Krishna's and I'm his servant. And this is the field that he's given me to do. And if one has that mentality, then one is always happy and one is always free. And even one's so-called anxiety, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my anxiety and my burdens become a source of pleasure for me. Oh, Krishna's given me something challenging to do. You know, if the temple president just asked you to clean the floor every day, all day, but if the temple president said, okay, listen, we have this big event coming up, I need you to arrange it, I need you to talk to the mayor, I need you to do this. Wow, they're trusting me with some responsibility. Let me do this really carefully. So it's really like, you know, Radhagiri and Hari have come off the altar and come to you and said, here's a soul to take care of. Take care of this soul nicely for me. Wow, what a responsibility I have. How nicely I have to do this to please my beloved Lord. And always thinking, is Krishna pleased? Is Krishna pleased? Is Krishna pleased? Is Krishna pleased? Then even the anxiety becomes very, very sweet. Because it's an anxiety of love you're doing for Krishna, not an anxiety of control, which we don't have. I'm no longer being in anxiety. Can I make the results turn out right? Because you can't. Anybody here can control the results of their activities? Anybody? Can you 100% control the results of your activities? Anybody? What about another person? Can you control the results of your activities when dealing with another person? I mean, you can sort of kind of control the results when you're using a blender. Maybe. Have you ever had a blender, everything leaks out of the bottom? You thought you were controlling. Oh, I just speak of another person. How are you going to control another person? So if you're in anxiety, control another person. Wow, there's no end to that anxiety. But if you're anxiety, will Krishna smile at me? Will Krishna smile at me? Will Krishna smile at me? Will Krishna be pleased with what I'm doing? That's very sweet. Is that all right? Okay. Yes, Trudu.
I'm sorry?
Did you have a question or a statement or a comment?
I just had one little comment, and it's getting kind of late, but this mood here, you know, which is serious renunciation song here, you know, like, that I'm just recalling how, because I just saw the you know, some of these old DVDs that Yadavar made. Last night we were watching 1974 Rath Yatra, you know, in San Francisco. Just absolutely amazing. All of the devotees and thousands of people, you know. And, you know, there's a good number of brahmacharis there, you know. And what I'm coming to is that we all kind of had to have this little epiphany of renunciation. I mean, I know I did. I didn't have that much. But whatever it was, I gave it up, knowing, because I was suffering, and realizing, well, this isn't working. And then you dive into the temple, and, you know, it's bliss. I mean, you know, you realize you don't need it. But what I'm getting at is that, can it stay? Because at a certain point, even after being a devotee for so long, that urgency of renunciation seems to loosen that, because... whatever, you know, your sadhana gets weak, or you commit an offense or something like that, and before you know it, you know, well, I need this, and you're not as...
That's why I got married.
isn't it like that? I mean, it's like...
Well, I didn't get married because my sadhana got weak, although I'm sure that I'm full of offenses. I see renunciation is, you know, you might be better able to answer that from another perspective. But I see that renunciation is existent on two levels. One is external and one is internal. And does the internal drive for renunciation ever have to become weak? No. Why?
It doesn't have to.
I don't see any reason why it should.
There's a real danger that it may, that you lose your hard edge, because he's right. You know, he's gone through this fire, you know, and now he's come to this point, and it's very powerful to read this.
Okay. So
how do you maintain it?
How do you keep
over
it?
Time? Sense
I would really caution that it doesn't, and I hope you're not going to never let me speak here again if I say this. Mm. I would really caution that this doesn't necessarily mean that one never marries. Because for most people, the way to solid renunciation is through marriage. I'm very sorry to say this. And we've had enough examples in ISKCON of people trying to do it another way and falling on their face. That we should see that there's a reason in the Shastra that there's generally brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. I wanted, when I joined at 18, to be what I am now, and I couldn't have done it at 18. This is what I wanted to be. I never wanted to get married. And by going through that grihastha ashram and raising children in Krishna consciousness and trying to be renounced as a grihastha, I'm on so much more of a solid platform than I was when I was 18. So I'd say for a lot of people, that's the road to renunciation. Probably for the majority of people. But you have to do it right. If you're going to get into grihastha life and get your widescreen TV and your Lexus or whatever it is nowadays, and you start waking up at 8 in the morning and going to Pizza Hut, well, that's a problem. So I don't think the matter is just what external path do you take. You know, if you can stay fired up without getting married, then please do it. Don't take the trouble if you don't need to. I mean, what a stupid waste of time and energy. But also be honest enough that if that's what you need, that's what you need, and that's fair enough. Better to do what you need to do when you're 20 or 25 than when you're 50. You know, we don't want people, which just happens, you know, you're 45, 50 years old, and go, oh my God, I got to get married. That's not a very good idea. But how do you keep that edge of renunciation? Okay, let's see. Don't offend devotees. And after that, don't offend devotees. And then make sure you don't offend any devotees. And don't offend any devotees. And don't think, I should just not offend my Guru Maharaj, but I can offend everybody else. And don't even offend the ants and the cockroaches and the trees, and don't even offend the hogs, dogs, camels, asses, and human bodies that you preach to. Don't offend anybody. Don't ever offend anybody. Because the main thing that's going to cut down that hard edge is being offensive. Don't commit offenses to any other living entity. And if you think you might have offended anybody, fall at their feet. Don't offend people in the name of service. Well, I've got to fix ISKCON, so to fix ISKCON, I've got to offend everybody in the process. Don't offend anybody. And have good association. Keep hearing, keep hearing, keep hearing, keep hearing, keep hearing. Read Prabhupada's books. Know Prabhupada's books inside and out and backwards and forwards and upside down. Listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures and conversations. There's some difference between reading Prabhupada's books and listening to Prabhupada's lectures and conversations. There's things Prabhupada has in his books that he rarely talks about in lectures and conversations. And lectures were aimed towards a general public most of the time. Conversations, interesting, different people that he's preaching to. If you really want to understand Srila Prabhupada, I'd say listen to conversations, listen to lectures, read Prabhupada's books. Listen to Prabhupada's lectures and conversations over and over and over again. Again, till you just know them. Till they're just part of you. Choose your association carefully with the devotees. Associate with people who have kept that edge of renunciation. Whether they're householders or brahmacharis or sannyasis isn't the point. But people who really want to please Krishna. Find people who are happy in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada wrote a letter, he said, unless you're joyful, you can't make any advancement. Mm-hmm. Find people who love being devotees of Krishna, who love chanting their rounds, who love worshiping the deity, who love going on book distribution. Associate with them. Don't associate with fault finders and naysayers and grumpers. And keep going quickly. I think the main thing I see that derails people is we're anandamaya vyasat. We're pleasure-seeking beings, kind of like heat-seeking missiles. And we're going to go to pleasure. We can't stay for a long time without pleasure. You just can't. You can't just say, I'm not going to be happy at all. It doesn't work. Therefore, the impersonalist path, where the impersonalists try to just stop all desires and stop all pleasures, klesho dikatarastesham, doesn't work very well. So if you give up material sense gratification, okay, you know, I'm going to follow the four related principles, I'm going to give up material sense gratification, and you're not yet tasting Krishna consciousness, then you're in this dry place where you have neither spiritual nor material happiness. How long can you stay there? How long can a jiva be without spiritual or material happiness? Okay, that's anista sadhana bhakti. That's anista bhajana kriya. Your spiritual happiness is very slight and you've given up material sense gratification. Bhagavatam says two people are happy. The fools and the transcendentalists. So you've given up being a fool and you're not yet a transcendentalist. What are you going to feel? The material miseries. They're going to be right here all the time. You become conscious. Right? When you're just a materialistic person, you're like, I'm happy. And now you're like, well, I'm really not happy. This material world is really lousy. Material consciousness is awful. Oh my God, it's terrible. How long can you stay there? It's like a desert. You want to get out of there as quickly as possible. You want to come to the stage of Nishtha and Muchi as fast as you possibly can. And that's what I see derails people. They stay in this Anistha Sadhana Bhakti and they can't maintain it. And they fall back down to a lower platform. So what speeds it up is don't commit offenses and have a mentality of wanting to get rid of the anarthas as quickly as possible. Getting rid of the anarthas in the beginning, my dear friends, is a very painful experience. Mm-hmm. And toward the end, it's a very blissful experience. Have you ever had a really big cleanup job to do? Like a really, 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 really big cleanup job to do? You went someplace that hadn't been cleaned for a long, long, long time. And when you first start, what does it feel like? I'm never going to get this done. It's a big job. It's miserable. And what happens as you start getting to the end? It starts getting exciting, isn't it? You start to see what the place could actually look like. So Chaita Darpana Marjanam, you're cleaning the mirror. First, when we look in the mirror, what we're going to see is not very pretty. As we start advancing in Krishna consciousness, you're going to look in the mirror and say, oh my God, I'm the demon. I'm the impersonalist. I'm the materialist. You know, when you first come, it's like, yeah, those materialists. And then you look in the mirror and go, oh my God, that's me. It's not pleasant. It's really extremely unpleasant that you see that my motives are lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. And, you know, you can run away from it, or you can say, yes, Lord, keep on cleaning, keep on cleaning, keep on cleaning. And pretty soon, as you start cleaning, then some of the actual mirror surface becomes visible. And then what are you going to see? Then you're not going to see the lust, anger, envy, and greed anymore. What are you going to see? What are you going to see in the mirror of your heart? Yourself. The actual self. And what does Krishna say in the sixth chapter? You will relish and rejoice in the self. Relish and rejoice in the self. We have most of the qualities of God. How wonderful. So go through that initial stage. Prabhupada said, until nistha, it's a hard struggle with determination. After that, everything comes very easily. You've got to go as quickly as possible through that hard struggle stage. Don't get hung up there. When Krishna shows you some anartha and says, deal with this, deal with it. Don't hold on to it. And then it will go very quickly, and then you'll be able to keep that edge. And also, I'll say frankly, that if there's some difficulty and you lose that hard edge for a day or a week or even a year, it's all right. You can pick yourself back up again and go on. Don't become discouraged. As Prabhupada says, even if you can't follow everything from the beginning, go on without consideration of defeat or hopelessness. So we may not be able to go back and have a new beginning, but we can start now and have a new ending. So even if we've messed up, and we may have messed up over and over and over again, and I may have offended devotees left, right, and center in the last hour, but I can still start now and go on. So don't get discouraged. I may not have heard the last 10,000 mantras that I chanted. That's all right, I can start hearing this one. So I can always start from now, start from now, start from now, start from now. Never become discouraged. Never give up. If Maya says, oh, it doesn't matter, it's too late anyway, you already blew everything, you already forgot Krishna, you're just looking at that pretty girl instead of thinking about Krishna's soul or forget the whole thing. No, okay, I'm going to start from now. And then you won't lose it. Whatever path you take, whether you take the path of going life externally of renunciation or whether you go through household all the life and try to be a Krishna-centered householder, you can keep that. It's possible. That was a long answer, but I thought the question needed a... Is that all right? Is that all right? Hang out with people like Dravida Prabhu. Then you're fine. Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.